Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we have a subject matter that I think is really unique. Who would think of writing about Buddha's wife? We all know about Buddha, but what about the woman that had the significant positioning in his life before he made the choice? The choice to seek the road to enlightenment, as we understand it today. Well, today we have a guest, Gabriel Constans, and he's going to be sharing some of the historical information regarding this woman, and also a little bit more than I think most of us would ever have anticipated that's not been written in the history books. Gabriel, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Donna. It's my pleasure to be with you today.
When I got your book, and I know that it's in novel form here, I was really intrigued with the title, number one. And number two, when I went through the book and I was reading it, I was fascinated with the distinctive points of information that you made relative to the women of that time and that era. Before we go into some of the details, I want my listeners to know that you are a freelance journalist. You have written for a number of magazines and newspapers, not only in the United States, but also Europe, Asia, and Africa. You have had stuff published in so many different areas. But you also are very much involved with the Rwandan Orphans Project in Kigali. Tell us how you got involved with that particular project. What brought that about?
That's the Rwandan Orphans Project, and it's I was invited to go there with a group of people about 4 years ago now, who were providing relief from symptoms of trauma that everybody in the country had in one degree or another from the genocide. And there was we did a lot of work with the children and also with adults and with people across the country in training them with different techniques to release some of the nightmares and trauma. And that's how I first got involved. And the orphanage just has over 100 children in it, and they became a lot like family. And I went back again the year after that, and I'm hoping to get back again this year. I haven't been for a year or two, and I keep trying to raise money for them because it's about $5,000 to $6,000 a month to keep them going for food and shelter and teachers and healthcare and, you know, everything involved. So.
Well, that's quite a project, and having an awareness of the hideous situation. It's mind-boggling, really, of the genocide and the brutality that people do to people is just beyond me sometimes. I just can't comprehend it. It does happen, though. And I think that they probably can use all the help that they can get because it was a hideous time. And I know I'm repeating the word, but I just don't know what else. Grotesque, abominable, what term do you want to use? I don't know that there's a word even you can to describe it. So I wanted people to know about that. Also, with Buddha's wife, I was intrigued with the cover of the book because on the cover of the book, there is this picture of this exquisite Indian woman's gown. And, of course, their handiwork and their work with silks and everything else is just absolutely magnificent. And you dedicated the book to Buddha's wife, to a number of women. You said all women throughout history who have been minimized, ignored, or solely remember as an appendage to their family or spouse. Bless you all for your wisdom, strength, courage, and unrelenting compassion. Without you, we would not be. Without you, there is no path, no way, no enlightenment, no peace. Without you, there is no story. Why did you choose to write a story about Buddha's wife? She's almost non-existent. And how did you find out enough information to put together contact?
Well, a lot of the, when I first started looking at this, I was with we were on our honeymoon in Sweden, of all places, with some friends there, Swedish friends there. And he was reading a book, a novel about Mary Magdalene.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fictional book, but there's a lot of historical facts involved in it as well. And he asked me, he said, you know, wasn't the Buddha married? And I'd been a Buddhist for almost 40 years in some form or other as far as meditation and practice. And I said, well, yeah, I think he was before he became known as the Buddha, but I don't know anything about her.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, you should write something about her. I said, yeah. But when I got back from the States, I started looking for information about her. And at the time, that was before the internet and looking everything up. So I went to the two largest libraries in our area, which is the Bay Area in San Francisco. I went to Stanford and Berkeley Library. And all I could find in English anywhere was two sentences written about her. You know, there's been thousands of books and articles and words written about Siddhartha and how he became known as the Buddha and then all of his mm-hmm. teachings for 40 years. But there was only two sentences I could find that were written about her, that she was the daughter of so-and-so and she became the wife of Siddhartha, who became known as the Buddha. And that was it. As in the last 10, 15 years, especially in the last 4 or 5 years, there have been more information available about her, but a lot of that has been just through some fables and stories from Pali, from some poems from nuns that were followers in the beginning, and that it is assumed that some of them were could have been written by her, but they aren't sure about that. So a lot of the information in the book is actually taken from stories about Buddha and about the people surrounding him and the women in his family. A lot of the early followers of Siddhartha, once he came back and had found what he just called the way or the truth or what, were people from his family, which included his stepmother, who was essentially his primary mother because his biological mother died at birth, and Pajapati, and also other people in the family, and Yashodhara, which is his wife's name, was one of the first followers and one of the first nuns also, but she didn't become a follower until 6 or 7 years later when he came back, because she and many people in the family, including his father, Siddhartha's father, were all very upset at him leaving them and taking off for they didn't know what, and that he wouldn't become the next king, and she was destined to be the next, essentially, like queen of the area.
Mm-hmm.
So they were all very heartbroken, and they were very angry about him leaving. And a lot of people don't realize that when he left, this is usually minimized by Buddhists as well, but that when he left, they had been married 10 years. They had just had their only child, Rahula, and he left in the middle of the night, and their child was just 2 days old, and didn't tell anybody where they were going or why or where he had gone. And so I always wondered, well, what was that like for her? What was that like for their son? That must have been overwhelming and heartbreaking. And of course, at the time, nobody knew that he was going to, what he was going to start teaching later on or anything. So I wanted to write something from her perspective, or at least from my sense of her perspective, of what things might have been like for her and her family.
When anybody has done any reading about Indian history, the caste system in India has been a tremendous challenge. Gandhi tried to break that down and was able to accomplish that to a point. But after he died, I know I heard someone interviewed not all that long ago that said the caste system is still as strong and proud as it ever was. Yet I think the younger Indian people are beginning to break that apart. It's a slow process, but it is happening. So when you're talking about Siddhartha and you're talking about Yasudhara. This is a time they were in that they were in royalty. That was it. They were the top of the hill as far as the system of the lifestyle at that time was. And when he did this, it had to be extremely traumatic for her, because Indian women, they did not have any options. And as a woman of the royal household, there would have been, I would have imagined, a tremendous, tremendous blame that would have been put upon her by different people, saying, oh, you weren't an adequate wife, you weren't this, you weren't that, yet her son is only 2 days old and he walks out.
Yes, and a lot of what's sadly is a lot of that, as you were pointing out, is still true, not just in India, but in probably over half of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That as far as what happens if somebody's husband leaves or isn't around or is gone, and is that they have no status socially or in society, and they have no income. And so in this case, she did have support and income financially. But you're right, as far as what people were saying about her was probably very true. And it's interesting, once Siddhartha later became a Buddha and started teaching, in some ways he was very revolutionary also, in that he did teach all castes. And that did not matter. He taught anybody, and that regardless of their background, their caste, their belief system, they didn't have to believe any certain way to follow him or follow any specific doctrine. And that, in many ways, is revolutionary. But he also was very much a product of his time and place and culture, and he was against women joining the order for many years.
Yes.
And actually, when you read the book, one of the parts of it you'll find is that one of his main disciples, Ananda, in a way sort of had to trick him into allowing women to become part of the order. But he eventually did. But when he finally did, they had to follow a whole additional crop of rules and regulations that none of the monks had to follow. And it was still very segregated. So.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. It was a period of time that is what was enforced. For him to totally break out of that modality would have been a very unique situation, and I am aware of the fact that as a leader, the women were nondescript, and I think that was very important, because there are so many things that we need to understand about cultures and what it is that has held people back. And that's one of the things that I think your book, though it's written in novel form, you do give a very good picture of cultural positionings. And I have had the opportunity of interacting with many women from India, and they still battle these paradigms. These have not disappeared. So it's arranged marriages are still strong, not as strong as they used to be, but they're still there. And it's really fascinating to be able to step back in time, as this story goes, and be able to realize that though thousands of years separate us relative to time, relative to culture, there's very little separation even in today's world. Now, one of the things that you bring out in the book, in the research, that Siddhartha was afraid of women. He was afraid of them because he was attracted to them. I mean, after all, this was a sensuous man. He lived in an environment where he had anything and everything he wanted. He never, ever wanted for anything from the moment he was born. And that probably was a very deep-seated fear that he had, that he would break down and wouldn't be able to hold true to what he felt he should hold true to. I remember reading Gandhi had a similar situation in his own life.
Yeah, my sense is that is really true from what I could discover. That, and a lot of people involved in Buddhism for really again minimize the reality of what he grew up in, which was surrounded by everything that he wanted protected. He literally could be with as many women as he wanted to for all of his young adult years, and was, and that there was more than likely a lot of fear that he would be, and some of his words actually say that, ensnared or taken back into being caught in his desires and not being, staying with beyond that and staying above that. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, a lot of that still, like you were saying, a lot of that is still true around the world. And with a lot of the other theme that I think that you probably also saw in this novel, in this story, is the question about whether you need to deny and separate your family life and your interpersonal relationships in order to do a greater cultural good, or to do something for humanity. For many years, I thought you had to choose one or the other to have a religious life.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a while, but I finally realized you didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But for many people, if you hear from their families also, like you mentioned Gandhi, Martin Luther King's family, Amma's, she's not married, but she has really not much personal life at all in India nowadays. And a lot of people, Mother Teresa is part of the nuns and
mm-hmm.
And not in a family setting, that they felt that they didn't always practice what they could do with a lot of people on an interpersonal level at home, and that was perhaps more difficult and more fear of separation. I don't know, but that comes out in the book a lot, also in the story.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that in Tibet, there used to be a number of orders. I don't know how many there are today, because when the communists went into Tibet, they just slaughtered people right and left. But there were orders where men and women could be married and they could have their families. And it was a household arrangement, but they had certain practices that they did, and they were very disciplined, but they had their families,
mm-hmm.
and the children were loved. And it was, I found that was very interesting, because I remember when I first started reading about material like that, I thought, well, it's either or. That's just
right,
like you.
Right.
It's either or. But that was not the case. And I know that there is a lovely woman that I interviewed that is a world traveler, that she said when she chose to accept certain practices, it wasn't an either or for her either, but they were called the householder.
Yeah, householder, yogi,
that type of thing.
Yeah.
So you have to live. Not everybody's going to be able. This world would really be in one pickle if everybody went off to a retreat on the mountain on top of the Himalayas or something. It's not going to work. We have to participate in life. We have to be able to do. And the spiritual self is no more separate from everyday living than anything else is. But there are those people that want to dedicate in that way, and that's fine for them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we are the householders. The majority of us, we're going to have to take care of business.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to take care of our children, our family, and there's nothing wrong with that. And that's something that comes through in your book. You actually show more than one paradigm of thinking in this cultural example. And Kisa is a fascinating woman, because she is Yasod's very, very dear friend.
Yeah, and her cousin in real life, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, that was actually her cousin in real life.
Yeah.
So this is what you did. You actually took these characters. They are from real life. When you were writing this, did you feel like the story was taking on a persona of its own? Did you feel like somebody was literally saying, no, you don't put that in, you put something else in. This is what I want you to tell.
Not perhaps that strongly or adamantly, but I did feel that somewhat. All the characters, all the people in the story are real, are people that existed during that time and place. And about, even though the book is about 50% fictional as far as things that happen, and 50% historical as far as is known, historical fact of things that happen. So all the characters are real characters about how, but some of the conversations, how they reacted, and what came up for each of them. Some of that, especially with Yashodhara, actually, and you mentioned it, Kisa, and Pajapati, some of those kept, I was started to go one way or talk about it in one way, and kept getting this sense of, no, that they needed to be completely different outlook. And, you know, they were just, for all, that's the thing as far as the things that are written, and as far as historically, most history has been written by men,
mm-hmm.
because most of the time throughout history, they are the ones who have been educated in most countries. More often, that's changed over the last 40 years in the West and Europe and in some parts of Asia, but still for thousands of years, it was mostly written by men. So for a lot of, you know, there's just as many enlightened women and just as many stories of what happened, although they may not have all been written down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's partly what I wanted to convey, is the power in the sense of just as valuable and just as insightful. And for all we know, Yashodhara was just as enlightened and just as wonderful a teacher as Siddhartha became mm-hmm. known as, but she was never kept track of or written down what happened. And she couldn't go place to place and teach like he did up and down India for 40 years, because a woman wasn't allowed to do that.
Right. They always had to have a male accompany them wherever they went. I mean, they were really, women were literally, and in some respects still are, slaves to the fact that if you didn't have a means of support, and mm-hmm. very few women were allowed to work. I mean, this just wasn't in the culture when you're talking mm-hmm. about that. And even in many parts of the world, it's not allowed today.
Yeah.
So your other option would be to become a prostitute.
Yeah. Yeah, and in 53,
and
a lot of the world, that's still very true. You read this wonderful book called Half the Sky, which was just written by these reporters recently. It's a Chinese proverb about women hold up half the sky.
Mm-hmm.
It looks into that a lot. It's interesting, there was the Jains, which were about 500 years before Siddhartha and Yashodhara and Buddhism came to be, or became known as Buddhism. He never called it that. The Jains were actually... it gave women equal rights in everything in India.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they were priests, they could teach, they had equal share of property and marriage rights. And some of those things Siddhartha incorporated, and other ones he didn't. But that is one of the few instances where that was taking place at that time and place, even before. But a lot of that has not changed. There's still mm-hmm. arranged marriages in over half the world. So.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and there's just so much, I think, that we need to understand, especially women need to understand and realize that there are many times these cultural patternings that were established for who knows, for whatever reason, and that any time you imprison or you disrespect the fact that women, if they're educated, can be just as intelligent as a male, and that they have the right to be included in it, when there is that awareness, I mean, a brain doesn't care what gender body it's in occupying.
Right.
It works or it doesn't work.
Right.
So when you get all caught off with this, what I call fluff stuff of mm-hmm. illusion, and people try to make it into law, many times it's to control.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
So whether it, and when you control the women and you put them into such a demeaning position, then, and you try to disempower them, then you actually are disempowering men. And
Absolutely.
Lots of times people don't look at it that way. And I say you cannot take away from the one
right.
and not take away from the other. And when you look at things historically, well, I don't care whether it's one group or the other, or whatever culture it comes from, you'll find that the men are just as much in the slave positioning as the women are
mm-hmm.
by those that want to dominate and want to control. I don't care
yeah.
where you are in the world.
Yeah.
So the many points that you bring out in this book, I think, can be pointed out cross-culturally. And I think when mm-hmm. one reads Buddha's Wife, there is an understanding of this, and it's nice to have a man be able to give a perspective and give it with a sensitivity that most women would say, how in the world did you figure that out? And I think it's very important. I think you've done quite a good job here. Now, Siddhartha's wife in the book is going through her last days, and you have formatted all of this information showing the different times in her life, and I think it's beautifully, beautifully done. I really feel that you have represented the women of that time frame in not just a respectful way, but in a sensitive way, showing how they had to cope with what was in existence at the time, and how even the men had to cope with it and had to work around certain modalities by being of a philosophical dispositioning and creating almost a Socrates type of questioning so that changes could be implemented.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I think that's, yes, it takes place that in the first person, and that she's speaking about her life, and she's remembering different times in her life before she got married to Siddhartha, when they got married, when she became a nun, after she left the order, and then it's simultaneously a story with her son Rahula, who's gone to Sri Lanka and is trying to make his way back with his wife Savarna and their son Bodhi to see her before she dies. And all these different people coming together, and historically she remained in the order her entire life, mm-hmm. and historically their son Rahula, which Siddhartha named Rahula, which means to fetter or to hold back, which is also interesting. He became a monk as well, and historically, and was in the order purportedly for his entire life as well. Mm-hmm. So those are some things that were changed. But yes, the story is predominantly shown and told from Yashodhara's perspective and from her reviewing her life. And then it goes keeps coming back to the present in the small hut and room that she is ill in.
Mm-hmm. And then there is the mystery woman that is in
there,
the book.
Yes.
And you'd have to read the book to find out who this mystery woman is. And the conversation she has with Sahara before she makes her transition. It's a beautiful story, and I think you give a very, very clear picture of how one person's actions can have dramatic effects on the lives of people, and how each of these individuals handled the drama of Siddhartha's choices. And I think it's very sensitively done. I think it is an excellent read, and it just makes you aware that there's no guarantees in your life, but it's what you do with what you know and how you're willing to grow as an individual that can enrich your life in a very special way, which it did for Siddhartha's wife on many levels. Now, you have a website, buddhaswife.com. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
All right, buddhaswife.com. My guest today has been Gabriel Constans. Now, you will find out also about his Rwandan Orphans Project in Kigali, and you'll find out more about this man who has a knack of being able to write about women in a very, very special way. Your book is absolutely wonderful. I wish you a great deal of success. And it is something that I think makes for a fascinating read.
Well, thank you, Donna, and thank you very much for your insight and for taking the time to read the story. I really appreciate it.
It is my pleasure. I wish you all the best. Don't forget, Gabriel Constans, Buddha's Wife. Go to buddhaswife.com and find out more information. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. More good things to come.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello, this is Donna, and welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And remember, if you're a first-time caller, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and I love to know what part of the country you're calling in from. And then, after that, sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anybody or anything that is of concern to you. I'm an information resource, and it's my delight to be able to share my skills with you. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we have been getting slammed with what we know as our spring storms. It's typical, but you know what? Mother Nature really has a very determined attitude in our part of the world, because she is just absolutely strutting her colors. Our rhodies are in bloom. The cherry blossom trees, you've been hearing me talk about them. Well, they are just out there. And, of course, the winds slam the blossoms all over the place. But something that really is adding a lot of color are the daffodils. They are coming up, and their sunshiny little faces are just beaming around every corner. People around here just love them because that's, other than the crocus, they are so bright and colorful. They're just absolutely delightful to have in your yard. And one of the things that I learned, I did not even think of this as many years as I've lived in the Pacific Northwest, that you can plant daffodils in the spring. I always thought you planted them like in the fall and you put them in the ground and you just let them, they go through the winter months, and then all of a sudden in springtime they start pushing up through the earth and then you have these beautiful flowers. Well, I learned that if you get already blooming plants in nurseries, your, you know, wherever you get them, you can plant them as you would an ordinary bulb in the fall. But you take and put the plant, obviously, in where so it's sticking out of the ground. And what it'll do when it comes fall, it will go dormant. And then you'll have them for next spring. Now, hopefully, when you plant them like this, if you're lucky, you won't have some happy little mole that comes along and decides that it's going to be its nice little snack. We planted tulips, and we've planted lilies, and we have often found, gee, they're not blooming like we thought they were. Lo and behold, when we go and we check our soil, we find that the plants have been, the bulbs have been consumed by these little rodent-like creatures that go underground, and they go, Snacksville time. Well, they're looking for food, too. But it's something that if you do plant the bulbs and you are consistent about them and you will do it, it's just going to be wonderful. So if you get some daffodil plants right now and they are in bloom, then by golly, put them out in the yard, and you'll be able to enjoy them in the next year's season as well. So I thought I would just share that with you. They are just absolutely awesome. Do you know that they grow in all 50 states? They grow everywhere. Daffodils are just wonderful. They're the first flowers, typically. Here in the Northwest, the crocus come out first, and then the daffodils come out. But it really means that the warmer temperatures are coming, and that is true. It is spring. And by golly, it'll just brighten your life. It is amazing how much lift they give to your life. Now, tomorrow I want to let you know we are going to be enjoying some fabulous music. Music by Stephen Killen. It's called Sapphire, the CD album that we are going to be playing. And it is just wonderful music. So we'll be playing some tracks of Stephen's. And then on Friday, we're going to be tasting the universe. Maureen Seabird is going to be my guest, and we'll find out more about that. And of course, shortly, there will be a posting of all the guests that are going to be coming up during the month of April. Lots of good things going on. Oh, by the way, for those of you listening in New York City, I am going to be in New York for a few days. I will be there for the 14th through the 17th, and I will be available for private appointments. So if you want to meet with me, then all you have to do is call my office. You can call at 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. And then in May, I will be flying to Fairbanks and Anchorage, Alaska, and I'll be available for appointments there. So for those of you, wherever you are, New York, Alaska, and who knows what else is going to be coming up, because things are changing big time in the SIBO saga. Give me a buzz if you want to chat, 888-815-9756. So many people are having to make adjustments in their lives. There's not a day that goes by that I do not hear a story about someone who's having maybe some troubles in business. It's because the economy, for all intents and purposes, has been in a depression. Now, that's my choice of words. It is not a recession. It has been a depression. And new things are having to be restructured. I was listening, interestingly enough, to the man who owns Starbucks, and he was talking about how badly things were going for the company. That's hard to believe. But that he had to have 10,000 office managers go to a meeting in New Orleans, and they had to be aware that there was going to have to be some major changes. So here is a huge company that's been very successful, and they're having to reinvent themselves big time. And they've changed their logo because they are changing their image. They've developed product lines and other things. What does the average person do when their life is smacked up, smashed out, and they really have to look at doing things differently? Well, we adapt. That's what we do. And instead of crying the blues and wailing and moaning, we take charge of it. And there is a woman by the name of Cindy. She has a couple of kids, Michael and Victoria. And they found that they entered into the recession style of experience when her husband was relocated to Wisconsin. Now, the company her husband worked for, the move had to be made quickly. They ended up buying a new house, but they were unable to sell their home that they had lived in for so many years prior to the move. They were carrying two mortgages. They had two children. And Cindy was beside herself. Her husband made good money, but how were they going to be able to handle two mortgages and take care of all the responsibilities? Well, in Wisconsin, life was a little bit different than where she had lived previously. So she was checking things out online, and she found a company called Botanical. And this is a forum that's for gardeners. And most of the people that were interested in what this company had to say wanted to deal with sustainability. And she said, I read and was talking with my family about the practices and the things that were discussed on this wonderful website. And she said, you know what? I got to thinking about it. This made sense. Not only would it assist us with our budget, but it also would mean healthier living for us. Now, she said, I am a city girl. I never grew anything in my life except flowers. That's all I was ever interested in. And she said, other kinds of plants, you've got to be kidding. They weren't pretty. Why would I be interested in them? This is a city girl. However, she began to really read more about planting vegetables. And she said she knew she had to stretch the budget because their food costs were quite high. When you have growing kids, if you don't have stock in a local grocery store, you can really end up spending a whole bunch of money. So she said she began putting in vegetables and fruit, everything from strawberry beds to apple trees, and she started watching things come into their own. And she said now she doesn't think of gardening and making her own jams as a money saver. She said, I really enjoyed doing it, and she said it has really brought us closer together as a family. Now, her children were willing to help her with the garden work, and she said the whole family gets involved in fixing meals, and her husband's still working. She said the food is delicious, and she said cost-cutting, wow, has it saved her money. She said now she spends about $200 to $300 a month on groceries, less than half of the $650 plus a month that she used to spend. And she said, it's amazing how resourceful you can become when times are tough. She said, and I don't get discouraged anymore. She said, I really feel I have been able to make do, and it makes me feel proud that I can say I've put up jams and pickles and vegetables. And she said, I feel more confident about trying things I've never done before. And she said, one of the tips that she would like to share with people is avoid convenience stores. She said she's even learned how to make her own soap. She's learning how to knit and quilt. And she said, you know what? If it wasn't for the recession, I don't think I ever would have tried to discover any of this. And she said, I feel my family is healthier and happier because of the choices that I have been making. And I thought I would share with you some statistics. 827 million dollars. Just wrap your mind around that figure. $827 million. That was in macaroni and cheese sales. That's right. Up over 77% during the last 5 years. That is a Mintel International Group. And 57% of Americans say they have cut back on their vacations. They're looking at different ways to have getaway time with the family. And one out of two Americans are saying today that they are going to save more than they ever did before. Interesting statistics coming from different research centers throughout the country. But something we need to remember, something Robert Schuller once said, and I really appreciate it, it's stuck in my mind. Tough times don't last. Tough people do. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. I have some money tips that I wanted to share with you, and then if I have the time, have a piece of paper and a pen. If you have a sweet tooth like I do, I think you're going to enjoy these maple pecan squares. They sort of have like a shortbread crust, but it's a perfect thing for, well, sort of like the wet weather we're having in the Pacific Northwest. It's cool, it's gray, and a hot cup of tea with a little bit of something like this. Oh, it's magical. It's wonderful. So I'm going to be sharing that with you. But let me give you some tips for being able to save some money. If you're a reader and you're watching your budget and you'd like to download some e-books for free, you can go to your local libraries. That's right. They are offering now e-books for borrowing for readers that like the Nook and the Sony Reader, and you can find them right on the branch's website. If you have a Kindle, then visit ereaderIQ.com or iReadReview.com for up-to-date lists of free downloads, including some flash sales that they might be able to offer you on best-selling authors. So get to know your library. They're doing all kinds of fabulous stuff. And, you know, if you don't have the money for a computer, I know a number of people that go to the libraries. They have sometimes really up-to-date computer systems that a lot of people can't afford in these difficult times to purchase for themselves. Use your library. Get to know your librarian. She is going to just be absolutely one of your best friends after a while. And these people are just perfectly happy. That's their job, to know a lot and then to be able to pass it along to you. So there's that. Also, for those of you that may have loved ones that are ill and you're concerned about prescriptions, and if any of you have elderly members in the family, you know that those prescriptions can just be through the ceiling. And there's all kinds of different things. You can get different supplemental coverages, whatever, but still medicine costs a lot of money. And you can save up to 60% on prescriptions and sometimes even, believe it or not, make money. But here are some tips that I have come across and I thought I would share it with you. If you have a prescription that is regularly refilled, you can turn it into a gift card simply by switching pharmacies. Rite Aid, CVS, and Target sometimes offer store gift cards worth up to $50 for bringing in a new or transferred prescription. Can you believe that? Who would have ever thought it would have gotten to that level? But it is. Simply by checking the weekly circulars to see when the deals are available. Also, if you find in your insurance coverage that your medications are not included, you can sign up for a prescription discount card. You can cut up to 20%, just show it and save. Some programs may charge an annual fee of about $20. Others are free. Now, here's where you go to find out what you need to know. You go to your-rxcard.com or contact aarp.org or AAA. Actually, it's discounts.aaa.com, and they'll give you information. Then, sometimes going to the pharmacy to pick up prescriptions is difficult for many people, and of course, you're spending money on gas. And with gas almost at $4 a gallon, you want to think twice about how often you're out just rambling about. So you can get a 3-month supply of your regular meds delivered to your door, and the bulk buy could save you 30%. Ask your doctor if he or she will write you a 90-day prescription. Then there is a mail order service that CVS Caremark offers, and they have an 800 number where you can call about this and find out. It's 552-8159 or caremark.com. carremark.com, carremark.com, or medcohealthsolutions.com, and their local toll-free number is 877-733-6765. And an additional bit of information is that Walmart and Target apparently have just expanded their programs offering $4 prescriptions for certain generics. So there are more than 300 types of medications that you can get in a genetic formula. And if that works for you, check with either of those stores to see if maybe you can get that kind of special buy. So I want to pass it along. It really is prudent, I think, to try to be knowledgeable. And in this world today that we live in, sometimes we are so slammed with so much information that we need to be aware that there are these other resources. And I think it's good to share it, and that's what I like to do. Okay, have you got that pad of paper and pen handy? Maple pecan squares. Oh, this is so good. You need 3/4 cup of unsalted butter. 3/4 cup of unsalted butter, and it needs to be at room temperature, and cut it into tablespoon portions. You're going to need 2 cups of all-purpose flour, 2 cups of all-purpose flour, 3 tablespoons of granulated sugar, 3 tablespoons of granulated sugar, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 3/4 cup of real maple syrup, 3/4 cup, 3/4 cup of packed light brown sugar, 3/4 cup of packed light brown sugar, and 2 eggs, and these need to be at room temperature, 2 eggs, 2 tablespoons of unsalted butter melted. That's going to be in another small bowl. 3/4 teaspoon of vanilla extract and 2 cups of chopped pecans. If you don't like pecans, use walnuts. If you don't like walnuts, use almonds. I mean, it's whatever you prefer. Now, you want to have your rack for baking in the center of your oven. You want to preheat that oven to 350 degrees. You want to take a 13-by-9-inch baking sheet. You want to have sides, baking pan. And you want to put in your food processor your flour, your granulated sugar and salt, and you just go zip, zip, and it's mixed. Then you want to add 3/4 cup of the butter. Remember, you would cut that into tablespoon portions. You want to pulse it until the mixture begins to clump together, sort of like pie dough. And then you want to press the dough that comes out of there onto a baking sheet. And you then want to pierce it with a fork. And you're going to put that in your 350-degree oven, bake it for 20 to 25 minutes until it's just lightly browned. Then you're going to take it out. Now, this is what you do next. You whisk your syrup, your brown sugar, your eggs, your melted butter, and your vanilla, and you want to make sure that the sugar is totally dissolved. Then you want to take your nuts, sprinkle them evenly over the crust, and then pour gently the syrup mixture over and put it back in that 350-degree oven and bake it for another 20, 25 minutes until the filling is set. Good stuff. That makes 30 servings. Yum. What a way to go. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Enjoy the glorious moments that you have. And if you're going through some tough times, realize they'll pass. You just have to be innovative like Cindy is and enjoy and appreciate the blessings that you have right now at this moment. Life is good. There's a lot to be grateful for. Enjoy your day. Tomorrow it'll be music. And I look forward to having you join me. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.